moment for the set-aside prayer. God, please set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others, especially let go of all my old ideas so I can live on your truth. Heavenly Father, help me carry your message today. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. Okay, we're on a vision for you, and we're on page 139. And welcome, guys.
What page am I?
159. We're on a vision for you, and we spent quite a time on this chapter. This was written in 1939. It's a vision for the reader on what they thought would be coming to place in their lives, and also a vision for AA, and it's powerful stuff. We looked at how without God, there's no hope. We have the four horsemen, and we get to that lonely place, the jumping off place, and we wish for the end. But then there is a substitute for a life like that. It's a life in the fellowship of AA and the fellowship of the Spirit with God. The fellowship that they described was different than what we have today. It was a group of people who were committed to seeking God together and had worked the steps and were progressing down that spiritual path. They were 100% serious about this. It was desperate people in the beginning, and desperate people took the action that was required to have recovery from this disease. And then they talked about, and they wanted to show kind of what, how this all came about. So they started with Bill W. and going to Akron, and how he was ready to drink because things were bad. Did anybody drink when things were bad? He was discouraged. He had bitterness. He had self-pity. He was separated from God. Why? Because he chose to. Because he wanted this business deal to go through. And I was trying to talk to somebody else who has wants and desires, but they're only 33 weeks clean and sober. And I said, you know, put that on the back burner. Put that in your God box. Let's focus on a relationship with your Creator so you can have those things happen in your life and deal with them positively. So Bill had done a lot of work trying to get people sober but hadn't succeeded. But he was sober. And his wife said, but Bill, you're still sober. And he went to people who were desperate. And he talked about his spiritual experience in the hospital in 1934. And he told Dr. Silkworth, from whom we got the, he told us our problem, that we have an allergy to the body. Anybody have that? That we cannot take one drink and control how much we drink. Now, we might do it one time. But then we'll say, well, you see, I controlled it that one time. So I could have a drink tomorrow, and then we're off and running, right? Because there's something wrong with our bodies. Can we fix that? No. Well, you could stop breathing, but I don't recommend it. There's nothing that can fix that. There's no pill. There's nothing that can change an alcoholic's body. And so the solution for that is not to drink. So, Bill, I was told, don't drink. But then the doctor had observed, he was a brilliant man, that even though these people were dying and they knew they shouldn't drink, that they had no power not to do that. Why? He could see it because they couldn't live sober. That's when the disease of alcoholism occurs, when you're sober. They could not live sober because they were living without God, and they got, he said, they got irritable, restless, and discontented. Anybody relate to that? That was my whole life, because I never was really connected to God. So I was irritable, restless, and discontented. And so they seek the ease and comfort of alcohol. Did alcohol or drugs make you feel better? Did they relieve this feeling of irritable, restless, and discontent? And there is a difference, like, between alcohol and possibly heroin. I never used heroin. I'm glad. I would have died. Or fentanyl or some of these other substances, because everybody will get addicted to them. They're addictive because they change your mind. But addicts then will stop using and drink, and then they'll get back onto the drugs. And so that's a really big problem we have now. But alcoholics, not everybody can get addicted to alcohol. And so we're unique. Isn't that great? But Dr. Paul said that there is a difference between alcoholics and addicts. He was a very brilliant man. He wrote Acceptance is the Answer. And it's very complicated, so I hope you can understand this. Alcoholics can't drink and can't use drugs, and addicts can't use drugs and can't drink. I think that's a good thing to remember. And so I don't know if it's 100% true. Don't try to prove me wrong. But I think it's a good thing. So the doctor described our problem, that sober, we can't live in the world and not drink. And then he says, when we succumb to this desire, succumb means to die, then we have the spree, because we have the allergy of the body, and then we wake up remorseful, swearing never to do it again. And then it's repeated over and over again. Anybody relate to that? And he says the only thing that'll treat it is a psychic experience, a relationship with God. Now, Bill had had that, and Bill had this relationship with God, but he had wandered a bit. Anybody ever do that? He had wandered a bit. Now, remember, there was no AA sponsorship, fellowship, big book, nothing. And he was on his own with God, but his ego was rebuilding. Has that happened to anybody? Because he wanted to be a success. So he goes to Akron, and things fall apart. So he doesn't have any money to pay the bill. He's in the hotel lobby on a Saturday, and he's sitting there, and he's standing there, and on one end is the directory, and the church directory, and the other end is a bar. And I think that's on page 154. And so he's attracted to the bar. And he thinks he might get a little relief from how he's feeling just by being there. And here's how alcoholics are. Well, I'll have a ginger ale and sit hopefully. And then, well, maybe I could have one drink. No, three drinks, but no more. And then he fear gripped him, and that was the hand of God. God said to Bill, this is not a good idea. And I don't know if he actually crossed the threshold into the bar or not. He was getting ready. And then he says, I'm on thin ice. And he says, there it is, the insidious insanity of the first drink. He could see it now. So he could see the truth about the first drink. He couldn't see it like 10 seconds or 30 seconds before. And the only way he could see the truth about the first drink is because of God. So if any alcoholic thinks you're going to get clean and stay sober the rest of your life without God, good luck. I don't know that it's possible. Willpower won't work. Fear won't work. At least for me, it's not. I can't speak for anybody else. And for the people who wrote this book, there was no way. So with a shiver, he turned away. He walked down the lobby to the church directory. And as he walked away, it's almost like Satan or someone, the music's playing. And don't go away, don't leave us. But he had the power to walk away, and we're here today. And he found someone, and they led him to Dr. Bob. He was in Akron. And Dr. Bob, he couldn't meet with him till the next day because Dr. Bob was drunk. And Dr. Bob was dying of alcoholism, a very brilliant man, a rectal surgeon. He was a rear-end guy. And Bill, our other founder, was what we would call a shyster. He was a fast-talking shyster trying to get business deals and talk people into things. And Bob met with him, Dr. Bob met with him, and then he finally realized why he couldn't stop drinking. He thought it was because he was a weak person. He thought it was because he was just a sinner and he wasn't worthy of God. He was a very religious man. He prayed, and he went to this Oxford group, which is the founding group of our group, because they were a foundation of Christian principles on how to practice Christianity, practice the principles that was taught by their Lord Jesus Christ. And Bob told the group 3 or 4 weeks before that he couldn't stop drinking, and he just wanted to stop, and he beat himself up. Anybody else do that? And so Henrietta Seiberling and his wife Ann Smith had prayed for him that someone would come, and then lo and behold, Bill W. shows up in Akron, Ohio. They meet on a Sunday. They talk for 5 hours. Dr. Bob said it was the first time someone explained to him what was really wrong with him. And he could see that he wasn't a sinful, evil person, which he wasn't. We're all sinners. But that his problem wasn't that he was weak-willed. It was that he had no power. And he couldn't stop on his own. And until he understood that he had to give up trying to do that on his own and allow God to do it, that there was no hope for him. And so it changed this whole perspective. And then he was able to stay sober for a couple weeks. Bill lived with him in Akron. And then he went to the AMA convention, got really drunk. And Lois, his wife, told Bill, don't let him go because there's booze there. He gets drunk every time. And Bill made the point that's made in the book that you can't protect the alcoholic from alcohol. You're not going to be able to move him to some desert island where there's alcoholics will find booze wherever they are. They even say in the big book you can go to Greenland and they'll find it, right? Or the ice cap. And so then Bill came back and he sobered up. They gave him, he actually took him 3 days to really get ready, and then he had to operate on somebody's rear end in the morning. And they gave him a beer, and he went and he did the surgery, and it was successful, but he didn't come home. So Bill and Lois was worried that the allergy was triggered, but Bob went around and he told everybody about his disease, what he had, and that how he had harmed them, and he made amends. And that was a big deal for him, because he was a doctor and he didn't want anybody to know. And of course, everybody knew. But he did that, and he was able to find some peace and be in the world of the Spirit. So he worked basically steps 1 through 9 fairly quickly. And he was in the world of the Spirit, which it says we enter in page 84, which is the world with God. And then they decided that they needed help right away on page 156, that they need to find someone to help or else they're in big trouble, right? And so they understood the principles of that to keep it, you have to give it away, that you have to get out of self. And so they found AA number 3, and he was a mess, and he was a lawyer, but he had been in there 8 times. And they talked to him, and they told him about the mental state preceding the first drink, and they talked to him about how the body is different, and he's told him he couldn't stop, and they outlined the course of action on the bottom of 157, and then on 158, it says, he thought about it all night, and he said, God ought to be able to do anything. Isn't that great? But for an alcoholic to see that God is all power and God can do anything is a big deal. And he says, he sure didn't do much for me when I was trying to fight the booze racket alone. So he knows he's fighting it alone, but he's still saying God didn't do much. Does that sound like things you've heard at meetings? And it says, on the third day, the lawyer gave his life to the care and direction of the Creator, and said he was perfectly willing to do anything necessary. Now notice that, perfectly willing to do anything necessary. And then his wife came and saw that he was different, and it says he had begun to have a spiritual experience. Now, why do we need to have a spiritual experience? What is a spiritual experience? It's a relationship with God, where we have the central fact of our lives is that we have a relationship with our Creator, and that God can do for us what we cannot do for ourselves. And we can absolutely rely on Him. Now, he began to have it, he walked from it a free man, and then here's the line I really like on page 158. And I reviewed, we have some new people here, and they haven't been here the last few weeks, so I hope this was helpful, put it in perspective. But he had found God on 158, and finding God had found himself. I think that's so true. And Sandy Beach says that's the greatest gift that he got from AA, was that in finding God, he found himself. And he found himself, he found the real person that God created, not the one I created. And so when I feel okay today and I feel at peace, it's because I'm with God and I'm the person God created, so why do I have anything to disturb me? And so that's a great gift. Now, of course, I don't stay that way all the time. Anybody do that? No. Because the ego says, well, what are you doing? We have things to worry about or things that you need to manage. And so I try not to pay attention to that person anymore. And so we learn something. We learn something from the steps. We learn the person, and that's why I have this card. This is what my vision is, to have God's personality. And I don't want to have my personality. Here we go, guys. And so that's my goal each day, is how to do that. And then we talked about the next guy they found. He was a mess. And on the top of 159, he says, the way you fellows put this spiritual stuff makes sense. I'm ready to do business. And so how would you put the spiritual stuff if you need to work with a new person? That's what I'm going to talk about next Saturday night, the solution. I'm going to talk about how do we go from a hopeless condition, mind and body, to a relationship with God, and how do we stay there? And it says, then they, at the, and this is where we pick up, all this time our friend of the hotel lobby incident remained in that town. He was there 3 months, so Bill W. lived there 3 months. He really wasn't working in New York. He was living with his wife in their father's house. He now returned home, leaving behind his first acquaintance, we're on 159, the lawyer and the devil may care chap. He says, these men had found something brand new in life. And what was it? It was a way to live in which they were not running the show and God was running the show. And it says the 12 steps are a group of spiritual principles that is a design for living that works. My design for living didn't work. And if your design living doesn't work, then AA says, well, try our design. AA doesn't tell you what to do. I don't tell anybody what to do. Well, I try not to, but it's hard for me. It's one of my character defects. Don't worry, I've got a higher power at home. Brand new in life, a way to live. That if the less I manage, the better my life goes. The more I let God manage it, the better my life goes. I still have to do the role God assigned me. I still have to do His work and stay close to Him. But when I do that, things go well. They knew they must help other alcoholics if they were to remain sober. But here's that motive became secondary. What was the great motive for doing it? It was transcended, surpassed by the happiness they found in giving themselves others. I can't explain it, but when I don't know, maybe I'll have it today. But I used to have to work on Saturdays and make rounds and go to the hospital and run around and then be here by 9:15. I had someone help me open up. And then I'd have a lot of stress, you know, work and all that. But after I did the meeting, I'd always go to Jimmy John's and get subs. And then I'd come home and sit in my chair and turn on the ball games, and I would feel great, better than anything any drug or alcohol could have done for me. I can't explain it, because I felt like I'd been with people who were sharing the path together, and I felt different. I can't explain it. I felt good. And that's positive self-esteem. And I feel that way when I'm working with somebody. I'm trying to help them. transcended by the happiness they found in giving themselves for others. Nothing is better than that. So all my life I tried to find happiness by how I could manage the world, remember? And I didn't, you know, it was transient. Remember, we had the delusion that if we could wrest satisfaction, happiness out of the world, if I managed it well, if I managed you and got what I wanted. And I was trying to explain to somebody that what I want doesn't matter. They wanted something and they were afraid they weren't going to get it. Or if they didn't do this, then they'd have a resentment 5 years later. So I said, well, why would you have a resentment 5 years later? Well, you can get free of resentment in 3 minutes on page 66 and 67. If you do it a lot, you can get free in, what, 30 seconds? How long does it say to take the prayers? They shared their homes, their slender resources, and gladly devoted their spare hours to fellow sufferers. They were willing by day or night to place a new man in the hospital and visit him afterwards. They grew in numbers, they experienced a few distressing failures, but in those cases they made an effort to bring the man's family into a spiritual way of living, thus relieving much worry and suffering. So if the new man didn't work, then they would work with the family. And remember, sponsorship in the Oxford group was you sponsored someone to go to their meetings that they wanted this thing. And sponsorship in early AA means you pay for the hospital bill for the guy that went to the hospital. And it's changed now. It was someone sharing the path. You and the man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. Not anyone leading someone or higher than them. There's the higher relationship is with God. We're all in a horizontal relationship. None of us in here any better than anybody else. And anything that I'm able to do well in AA is because of God working in my life, not because of me. So when I felt good on Saturdays after doing that, it wasn't that I was great. I felt like I had done a work, God's role for me. And I felt close to him. And it says that when the third step promises that we have a new sense of purpose. We have a new way. We're reborn. We lose fear. It says a year and 6 months later, these three had succeeded with seven more. So after 18 months, they had 10 people. See how hard it is? So their success rate wasn't really, and they were dealing with desperate people. Dr. Bob would go to the hospital, and if they didn't want to get down their knees and give their life to Christ, he went into the next room. He wasn't going to waste his time if people weren't defeated. They weren't done. And they tell us that in the book. And how much time if I tried to not waste, but tried to help people who weren't defeated, and then they end up firing me and I feel bad. Tell me that's not some kind of character defects or something. And so we have to remember that we're not the ones responsible. They're responsible for their recovery. We're responsible for showing them the path. And we want to have the hand there, we want to have the hand available to them, but we don't want to be dragging them. We want them to grab that hand and be pulling us too. And so that's the way I see it. And this book, now that I've been doing it for so long, this book is written for desperate people. Why are so few people here today, and they're going to be 80 at a discussion meeting? Because only desperate people really want to get into this. Because this is written for people who have no other way out. It says in the foreword that we have a seemingly hopeless condition of mind and body. We're going to show you specifically how we recovered. And there's specific directions in here. And one of the other issues is that there are a lot of people in that 80-person meeting that don't even know that there is a book that has the program of action and the solution in it. Because AA's changed so much. Joe and Charlie talked about it, and that talk was from 20 years ago. It's not that it's good or bad, it's just the way it's changed. So one of the purposes of this meeting is to carry this message in the book. to someone here, and then they'll do it, and they'll carry it to someone else. And I think that has happened in 13 years. And I think I've helped one person at least. But the person I've really helped the most is myself. Seeing much of each other, scarce an evening passed as someone's home did not shelter a little gathering of men and women. Happy in their release, grateful. Are you grateful today? If you ever feel bad about something or something isn't right, just look where you were the day of your complete defeat and how much better your life is. When we look back, the things that happened when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything I planned. I mean, look back. Then the other thing is try to remember how bad it was when you gave up, you finally surrendered. And I hope you can remember that, because it's important that we have keep that moment of defeat alive. I remember how bad it was. And I can't describe it to anybody else. Somebody said, you're going to talk next week. Make sure they know how bad it was. Well, how can I tell you how bad it was? It was really bad. I mean, I was full of fear. I was at the end. I was at the end of the line. And I know, like, Brian knows what I'm talking about. Mark knows what I'm talking about. I just couldn't go on anymore. And I gave up. It was a gift. I didn't realize that morning that I was going to give up. At that morning, I figured I'd just go on and die. You know, well, there you go. There's no solution to this. And then all sorts of things happened. The people in this room today should be really grateful to God, because the only reason we're sober and we're sitting here is because of God. And then we have to allow Him to keep working. See, if we stop doing it, we'll separate from God, and then we have no power. And they were happy in their release, think about that, and constantly thinking of others and how they might present their discovery to some newcomer. Now, I've heard that the newcomer is the most important person in the meeting. I can't find it in the book. I think everybody's important at the meeting. And the newcomer is important that we share the message with him, or we reach out to him, and we make ourselves available to the newcomer. He's not the most important person. The most important person is me reaching out to him, offering to help him, getting his number, telling him I'm going to call him, giving him my number. I've done that a million times. That never works. Get their number and call them and see if they want it. At least be available. Give them the effort. I don't know if that makes any sense. But the newcomer is important to me, because then it gives me the opportunity to share the message and carry the message. And so that's why it works both ways. In addition to these casual get-togethers, it became customary to set apart one night a week for a meeting to be attended by anyone or everyone interested in a spiritual way of life. I've had some family members come, and they don't know what to say and how to identify. I just say, you're a spiritual seeker. You're a fellow spiritual seeker. This meeting is open to everyone. I don't understand the open and closed, and I'm sure it has a point to it. Maybe it did. But I want it to be open to everybody, but we do have anonymity, so don't go to your doctor and say, I saw Michael Hurwitz at the AA meeting, although I don't care anymore. But somebody did. Somebody had a week and went and saw one of my colleagues and told them that they saw me at the A meeting and they really liked it. I said, well, great. What do I care? But you know what I'm saying. I don't know. I've really gotten off today. I blabbered a lot. Anyone or everyone interested in the spiritual life. Now, do you think the spiritual way of life would help our country? Oh, my. Look at the news. Both sides. Everybody. Just, are we seeking God? Are we seeking God's will for us? Are we seeking our will and what we think is best? And they're not agreeing with us, so they're no good. It's been going on, if you read the Bible, forever. Aside from fellowship and sociability, the prime object was to provide a time and place where new people might bring their problems. So this is where I think they may get that. And what are the problems that they're supposed to bring? Not that they're to come and talk about their problems, but they're to bring themselves, because they're the problem. And then they can find the solution. Joe and Charlie had that really nice thing about old members surround the new member. The new member is someone who hasn't worked the steps. The old members just mean they've worked the steps. And then they make the new member be willing to believe, to decide, to pick up the kit of spiritual tools. They have this box called Spiritual Kit of Tools. Pick it up, do it, and then they become an old timer. And they weren't talking about length of sobriety. In fact, they didn't celebrate birthdays. I don't know when that practice started. But the old member brought the new member through the steps, and then they became an old timer. And so that's all we really do. And that's the prime object, is to be able to carry this message to someone. So we want to stay in the message. That's why I like to stay in the book, because no matter what we read in these 164 pages, it's going to bring us to the message and the solution. Outsiders became interested. One man and his wife placed their large home at the disposal of the strangely assorted crowd. That was the Williams family. They were in the Oxford group. They were not alcoholics. This couple has since become so distracted that they have dedicated their home to this work. Eventually, they left the Williams and the Oxford group, and they started a meeting separate for just alcoholics. But the Williams meeting was an Oxford group meeting, but it was basically the new alcoholics. And then they started their first AA alcoholics meeting, and they didn't call it AA yet because the book hadn't been written. And Dr. Bob read a non-AA approved literature, the Bible, at the first, that was a joke. People don't understand what AA approved literature means. It just means they could sell it. And so they left the Williams group around 1939. The name Alcoholics Anonymous was taken from a book called Alcoholics Anonymous. Does anybody know where that book is? It's right here. Yeah, because we call it the big book. It, a lot of people don't know that it's called Alcoholics Anonymous. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. And Alcoholics Anonymous is the steps. And that's the deal. And I think I'll stop there. I don't know. I hope somebody got anything out of this. I wanted to review because they weren't here for the other meetings. And I'll open it up. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.